This is Oregon on the Record on KLCC. I'm Program Director Jason Brown. What follows is a conversation that host Michael Dunn had with Oregon Senator Ron Wyden. They recorded this conversation last Thursday, July 18th. Wyden, of course, weighed in on President Biden's decision to at that time stay in the presidential race. Wyden expressed his support for Biden and noted that the Democratic Party's top priority is to defeat Donald Trump in November. Now, following Biden's announcement that he's stepping down from the race and his endorsement of Vice President Kamala Harris, Wyden has reiterated his support for Biden and has fully backed Harris as a candidate. You can find that reporting and get more reactions from Oregon politicians at klcc.org. Of course, there is plenty else to discuss, and in the following conversation, you'll hear Senator Wyden weigh in on the Republicans' platform following the Republican National Convention, his reaction to the Supreme Court's decision to uphold laws like those in Grants Pass that would impose criminal penalties for public camping and public sleeping, and his call for an investigation of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas over concerns of tax avoidance. Here's Michael Dunn's conversation with Oregon Senator Ron Wyden on Oregon on the Record on KLCC.
I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Senator Ron Wyden has seen a lot in his decades in office, yet the events of the last few weeks and months are about as unprecedented as it gets. Yet Wyden, the consummate political optimist, is focused on local issues that he says are what voters truly care about. Senator Ron Wyden, always good to see you, sir. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me back, Michael.
Yeah. Always appreciate you talking about a whole host of subjects. I do want to start with this. I mean, obviously, we're a week out from that horrific shooting at former President Trump. Here's my question for you. You know, does this elevate concerns for someone such as yourself, who's a public figure, about political violence, about the safety of yourself, your staff, and your colleagues?
Let me describe to you the 24 hours after the horrifying shooting. Mm-hmm. I had a scheduled town hall meeting in Columbia County, and I've had almost 1,100 town hall meetings, and all of them, including Columbia County, were the exact opposite of the horrifying events in Pennsylvania. You know, Oregonians have differences of opinion. Everybody got to ask their question. And what I said, and I've been saying it all this week, is I want Oregonians to know that for me, it is First Amendment always, political violence never.
After the shooting, there's been a lot of talk on both sides of the aisle about taking down the temperature, and especially with some of the more incendiary rhetoric. I'm wondering, from your opinion, are you seeing that? And probably more importantly, do you think that if it is happening, can it continue?
What I'm always asked, because you know, rumor has it there's an election coming up.
Indeed.
You and I talked about it. The best politics is good policy. For example, I've been talking a lot about holding down senior citizens' prescription drug costs. We're taking on Big Pharma. We're beating Big Pharma. And those are the kinds of issues that Oregonians want to talk about, and they don't want to hear about all of this, you know, antagonistic kind of rhetoric for the sole purpose of sort of bombast and being loud.
I would love to get your sort of thoughts on the Republican National Convention. What are you hearing? Is there maybe a more collaborative rhetoric, or do you feel not so much?
They've been all over the map. I mean, Donald Trump Jr. served up one big slab of red meat last night to the Republican base, but you know, one of his relatives in the Trump family was talking about unity. Let's be clear. that you look at Project 2025, for example, that's all about turning back the clock on women's rights. What did Donald Trump, you know, do? He gave tax breaks to, you know, billionaires. And, you know, the reality is if a billionaire wants to pay little or no taxes for years on end, they can just buy, borrow, and die. Three words. Mm. And we have a different set of values.
Okay. Okay. Let's stay national for a bit, because you've recently made news in terms of calling for a special counsel investigation into Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. Talk about that, but give our listeners kind of a lay of the land of why you've been calling for this.
Well, our committee has been doing a long inquiry into tax avoidance. That is one of the issues that's under our jurisdiction. And Clarence Thomas was given this motor coach worth almost $270,000. And the reality is we've looked at all the underlying agreements, and it was to be a loan. But now it looks like the loan has been forgiven. Hmm. That is a taxable event under federal, you know, tax law. And we have questions about whether any taxes have been paid. So we have long looked at these issues. We're looking at Leon Black and his relationship to Epstein and the like. But, you know, tax avoidance, I mean, you know, the government just said we raised $1 billion from millionaires who weren't paying taxes owed. So that, again, is something different between our party and the Republicans.
Sure. And so your hope is that a special counsel could have the subpoena power in order to tease out a lot of this information?
Special counsel can initiate an inquiry. And people have said, well, Ron, this is like the political season. Of course you guys do it. I said, our investigations, the finance investigative team, as we do it by the book. And let me give you an example. You know, Hunter Biden is now having his taxes, you know, looked at. Several of the accounts involved, you know, his taxes. So, you know, both parties, the rules should apply to.
Okay. Let's stay with the Supreme Court, because, you know, obviously a huge decision came down that started here in Oregon in a town you were just at, Grants Pass. I'd like to talk about Grants Pass versus Johnson, the Supreme Court ruling that basically criminalized camping and kind of what is your stance on that and what you're hoping to achieve.
Well, I obviously disagreed profoundly with the Supreme Court's decision. Congresswoman Bonamici and I have led an effort with our colleagues to try to make sure we put a focus on dealing with what I think is the heart of it, and that is expanding housing supply. And the reality is those Supreme Court judges aren't going to jump in on a plane and fly into Southern Oregon. We're going to have to take this on ourselves, and my hope is that next week we'll have a vote in the United States Senate on my legislation to create hundreds of thousands of units of low-income housing, what's called LIHTC, low-income housing tax credits, mm-hmm. is the exact vehicle that could really help communities like Grants Pass.
Yeah, and I think that if I read correctly, it would also help in terms of, you know, lessening the sting of evictions or whatnot.
Absolutely, it would help with that, but it also would help with using unused federal buildings in local communities with nonprofits and other organizations trying to make sure that people who are vulnerable have a roof over their head.
Yeah. It's interesting. You're here. We just finished up a series of shows about firefighting and firefighters, wildland fires, as well as urban fires. And, you know, we're talking about climate change and so on and so forth. But you obviously have some legislation towards, you know, kind of including provisions to help fund more firefighters. Talk about that, because obviously, you know, as we always talk about, you know, Oregon now has five seasons: spring, summer, winter, fall, and fire, and it's not going away. And so, talk about what you're trying to do.
Michael, I've been to a lot of fire briefings in my time in public service. Yesterday was just stunning what the agencies and their heads told me. Their words, not mine, was that this was a war. And I said, a war against who? And they said, against all this dead and dying material that is growing on the forest floor, that is, in effect, a magnet for fire.
Sure.
We've had a lot of human-caused fires this year. We have lightning strikes. You have one of these, and all of a sudden, you got infernos on your hands. And I'm always telling the people back east, I'm saying, in the West, these are not your grandfather's fires. They're bigger, they're hotter, they're more powerful, they're leaping over rivers. And I promised yesterday to the heads of the agencies, federal and state, that I'd pull out all the stops when we come back to get some additional help to clean out that dead and dying material. I also have, I think I touched on this with you before, legislation that's getting support to deal with prescribed burns, mm-hmm. where you could go in the colder weather months and reduce that, you know, fuel load on the floor.
Yeah. I know you've been a friend of firefighters for a long time. It was interesting. I was talking to the fire chief here in Eugene, and he was talking about the fact that one of the challenges they have is that, like a lot of industries or organizations, it's hard to find firefighters. They're having a real difficult time, you know, retaining and hiring new people. And I know that that's an issue you've talked about.
Let me tell you what goes on in Oregon. You know, I have town hall meetings in all 36 of Oregon counties. Mm-hmm. When I go to the little ones, I often see a place that says help wanted. Mm-hmm. And I go inside and I say, well, what are you offering? What kind of pay? And very often they are offering a higher salary than firefighters get. So I am working on legislation to get a competitive wage for the firefighters, and we're looking at some of the tax avoidance issues too.
Okay.
Raise the revenue to pay for it.
Okay. Speaking of town halls, you're famous for going to so many town halls, and I'm wondering, you know, perhaps in the last few months, the town halls that you're going to, what are some of the things that people are talking to you about? Specifically, I want to ask about, you know, how are they feeling about the economy? How are they feeling about inflation? How are they feeling about job growth? It seems like there's a lot of good news about the economy, but it hasn't necessarily, at least in some reporting, it hasn't necessarily changed sort of the feelings on Main Street about our economic power right now. What are you hearing?
Well, the big issues that I hear in the recent town meetings are the one where the second word is bill. It might be medical bill. It might be housing bill. It might be education bill. It might be gas bill. Those pocketbook issues are what, you know, concern, you know, Oregonians. And, you know, we're still coming out of, you know, COVID. We're looking at a whole host of global kind of challenges. I mean, what happens, you know, today, thousands of miles away from where we're sitting can affect, you know, Oregon consumers and buyers. And it's been a challenge in terms of housing because we don't have the supply, and that bumps up, you know, rates just by the law of supply and demand. So we got a lot of work to do. But, you know, at the same time, and I've been out talking about this, we're laying some of the building blocks for the future. I mean, the semiconductor sector is tailor-made for us in Oregon. We have Intel. We have plenty of, you know, companies, and you use our phones, and that manufacturing opportunity from the time you get up in the morning till the time you go to bed at night, and it's going to be a lot of family, you know, wage, you know, jobs, and it's going to be, you know, a lot of green for blue-collar workers.
Obviously, the Democrats get their turn coming up, the Democratic National Convention. I kind of wanted to get your, you know, thought on what do you think people are going to hear from the Democrats? They're obviously going to be reacting to what happened with the Republican National Convention, but also kind of what do you envision the convention is going to look like? Because it's going to be an interesting convention.
We'll talk about, you know, priorities like making sure that women, not government, get to make the healthcare decisions of women. That is a overarching, you know, issue because millions of women in this country have watched this effort by Republicans to turn back the clock. You know, I had the first hearing as a young member of the House of Representatives on mifepristone, this whole debate about, you know, medicine as an alternative to surgical abortion.
Mm-hmm.
My principle was pretty simple. It was science, not politics. So that'll be central. And I think the whole debate about taxes, you know, will as well as, you know, Donald Trump, you know, basically believes in giving billionaires everything and anything that they're interested in. We favor, you know, making sure that, you know, nurses and firefighters and teachers and small business people get a fair shake. We want an economy that gives everybody in America a chance to get ahead, not just the people at the top.
Do you think if the Democrats retain the White House and the Senate, do you think that those tax cuts you talked about that were passed in the Trump administration, because I understand that they would sunset in this administration, do you think it's possible that that would happen then?
Well, everything's going to be on the table in 2025. But I'm going to tell you, I'm starting this as chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. We want an economy that gives everybody in America the chance to get ahead. And the idea that somebody who is a nurse or a teacher and is listening to this program, who pays taxes with every single paycheck, gets pounded when they're trying to figure out how to make ends meet and the like, and they hear about a billionaire paying little or nothing for years on end. And I want people to be successful. I believe in that ethic of the success. It's what our country is all about. But when people aren't paying anything, they aren't paying anything into Social Security, for example.
Yeah, yeah. Senator, my last question for you is this. There's a lot of angst, in almost every corner of this country and in Oregon about the upcoming presidential election. I kind of wanted to hear from you, maybe philosophically, to listeners about, you know, kind of maybe where they're you know, their thoughts should be optimistic, pessimistic, reasonable, because obviously it keeps talking about this is an historic election. And sometimes people talk about that democracy itself is on the ballot. I want to hear from you how you're viewing the upcoming election.
Michael, I'm somebody who's been through a few elections.
Yes, you have.
Oregonians know. And so I always kind of try to frame it in terms of what I think the election, you know, is all about.
Okay.
Political change is hardly ever top down. It's grassroots, you know, up. And I think that if women and small businesses and young people trying to get ahead look at the kind of economy we're talking about securing as opposed to a Republican, you know, vision of basically breaks for, you know, people at the top and, you know, trickle down, we'll do fine. But our job is to get our folks out. We win when we get them out. You know, a lot of people say, well, is anybody going to be interested in voting and the like? I'm telling young people that I'm out with, we can't afford to have you sit this out. There are too many things that are too important to you. And, you know, if you want to control your own health care, you want to have a fair shot at getting ahead, you want to look at, you know, new industries as a possibility for good-paying jobs so you can stay in Oregon, we're the party that'll do it.
Good enough, good enough. Well, Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon, always great to have you in studio talking. Thanks so much.
Let's do it again, Michael.
Sounds good. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record on KLCC. Our high temperatures are driving folks to our lakes and rivers. As such, it's a great time to do a quick reminder about the dangers of taking the plunge and how best to be safe. Lane County Sheriff Search and Rescue Coordinator Tim Chase, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
What are some of the biggest challenges for your department as more and more people are going to start heading out with the warmer weather onto the water?
Well, I think it comes down to sort of three different parts. Mm-hmm. The first one being changes since last year. So new water, new hazards, especially on float trips on the river. Throughout the winter, we had plenty of trees come down. So there'll be new things that weren't there last year. So we want people to pay attention to that and look up at the Marine Board's website to check out hazards. Maybe, you know, do some pre-scouting and always keeping their eyes downstream as they're floating, because they're always moving towards something, and you need to be aware of what's ahead.
Yeah.
The second part is life jackets. Life jackets are a critical piece of equipment to have. And while the law doesn't necessarily require everyone to be wearing them all the time, it's kind of like a seatbelt. When something happens, you may not have time to put it on. So our recommendation certainly is to get a good, comfortable life jacket that fits you well so that you can just leave it on the whole time you're out there on the water. It can make a big difference.
Sure.
And then the third is the right kind of equipment. We see a lot of people recreating out on the lakes and in pools with pool toys. But when those pool toys go into the rivers and some of the more natural environments, it's pretty easy for a stick or a branch to get hooked on one of those, or if they're tied together, for one to get hooked, and then a group of people might all be in a bad situation quickly. So sort of that combination of preventative, you know, looking ahead to see what's out there, having that life jacket, and then having good equipment for the water that you're going onto.
Yeah, yeah. And boy, I would imagine this year in particular, because of the ice storm that we had that knocked down so many trees, that chances are that could have an even more sort of ripple effect for streams and lakes and rivers this year, couldn't it?
Yeah, certainly could. There's definitely a fair amount of wood in the river that has found its way into some different places. One hazard we've been watching and trying to do some mitigation on is in the rapids there near I-5, mm-hmm. Where the old Lowhead dams in that area. There's definitely some pieces of debris piled up in there in some dangerous spots. So our recommendation is for people to avoid that whole area entirely, move to the river right side, and you can get around that without really getting into a hazard. But it goes back to people, you know, being aware of the area and what they're going into, so they can make those plans plenty in advance of when they get up on a hazard.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask, sort of in your experience, especially when it comes to water hazards and just boating in general, you know, is it, do you find that it's people who just simply were ignorant of proper boating safety, or is it a combination of that, but also people who just willfully, you know, neglect the right ways and the safe and the legal ways to boat?
I think a lot of the people we see having problems are either misjudgment of hazard, so they just didn't realize how dangerous the water would be, mm-hmm. or that the tool that they, you know, the equipment, the float tubes or whatever they were taking out there, they really expected them to do better for them, and they, you know, hit a sharp rock and deflate. There's a big difference between, say, a whitewater inflatable kayak or inflatable raft and a pool toy that's really just meant to, you know, float around in a nice, safe pool.
Sure.
So that's a big part we get. We definitely do see some poor decision making related with alcohol use on the water. That's something that we do see some effects of that. So between the equipment and experience and judgment, that's really where most of the accidents come in.
Well, we've been talking with Lane County Sheriff's Search and Rescue Coordinator, Tim Chase. Tim, thank you as always for coming on and talking with us. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow, we'll bring you a two-part series about the proliferation of guns in our state, what that does to our health and well-being, and how the gun industry markets its products to a diverse and growing consumer base. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.